for a division of the territory of Ivory Coast happened after a coup attempt to topple President Gbagbo's government failed on September 19, 2002. Then the failed coup became a rebellion as the insurgents controlled the northern part of the territory, actually more than half of the country, including the center and the north of the territory. But the division of the country was a reflection of the division of the Ivorian society in the decade preceding the rebellion in 2002. I think the failure of the political leadership of the country to find common views on the future of Ivory Coast after the death of President Ouphouët-Boigny in 1993 produced an increase in the political tensions in the country and finally provoked political violence and then a rebellion in 2002. Ouphouët-Boigny was the favorite of independence. He was considered as the most important figure in the country for 30 years. So when he disappeared in 1993, it was quite likely that the battle for his succession would be fierce, and the Ivorian political actors showed that they were ready to use every means to reach their objectives, that means to keep the power or to get access to the power. The Ivorian conflict is not a religious one. It is again a political conflict which is about power. It is, I think, the result of a failed democratic transition in the 90s. There was a need really to find common rules to govern the country and also to recognize that the country was very diverse in terms of people, and there was a need to create political institutions to be able to manage the diversity without violence. The conflict has been portrayed by some commentators as opposing the Christian South to the Muslim North. I think, first of all, that is just not true. In the South, for example, you have a lot of Muslim people who were originally from the North, but who has been living in the South for decades. So it's not true to just say that the South is Christian and that the North is Muslim. And the other thing is that, yes, the North-South divide describes reality in terms of a global diversity of the people living in the country. There are real differences in terms of culture, in terms of political affiliation between people from the north and people from the south or people from the west. But I think that the picture is much more complex than just saying it is north versus south. It is much more complex than that. You have really a wide variety of people living in the country, and you have also the question of the scarcity of resources in some specific areas where you have clear tensions between people who consider themselves as being autochthone and people who are not originally from this area. So the religious differences did not play a strong role, I think, among the factors which led to the conflict in Ivory Coast. As elsewhere in Africa and the world, the political strategies of the actors involved in exploiting all the factors which can divide the society to pursue their particular interest. And in Ivory Coast, the political players clearly were ready to use these means, including mobilizing on ethnic or religious identity to attain the migration factor is, I think, much more important than the religious factor. Africa is a specific country in terms of the importance of old and more recent immigration waves from neighboring countries. It was estimated in 1998 that around 26% of the population of Ivory Coast has a foreign origin, and about half of these people from foreign regions were born in Ivory Coast, which shows that immigration is a very old story. From the colonial area when France was the colonial master to the post-independence area dominated by the power, exclusive power of President Ouphouët-Boigny, there was a deliberate policy to bring over West Africans to Ivory Coast, especially to develop the agriculture of the country which was just booming. millions of people from neighboring Burkina Faso and Mali officially went to Ivory Coast both before and after independence, and they stayed in the country. It was also the case for a large number of other West African nationals who had a bitter economic situation in Ivory Coast than in their own countries. This huge immigration was not a destabilizing factor and was not a factor of high tension when the Ivorian economy was growing fast, and also because of the specific personality of Oufri Boigny, who deliberately chose to build Ivory Coast economically with the labor force coming from all West African countries. But when the economic situation deteriorates in the 80s and 90s, the migration factor became a hot issue, ready to be exploited by politicians in their quest for power. And it is again the failure of the political leadership to admit that the country was built on immigration, and that in such a country it is impossible to adopt brutally restrictive rules in terms of nationality and in terms of land ownership. I think it is this failure of Ivorian leadership which really was at the heart. Well, in fact, only part of the new forces, the name of the rebel forces, were initially a member of the Ivorian army. The Ivorian army came to be divided in the same way Ivorian society. It was the result of the political practices of the Ivorian leaders. Within the army, there were both sovereigns and northerners, supporters of one leader and supporters of others, and the political tensions increased in the country. They also increased within the army, and there were also specific problems in terms of living condition, in terms of salaries within the military, which played a role in increasing the likelihood of tensions coming from the army. The first indicator of the division within the army came with a coup which toppled President Bédié in 1999. This coup was led by young soldiers who were dissatisfied with the government and with their own conditions, and also with the political orientation of Bédié's government at that time, which was based on the question of Ivorianité. That means a kind of a restricted definition of Ivorian citizenship. So soldiers from the north of the country felt that they were threatened by this political orientation, which seems to give more power, more rights to Ivorian coming from the south than to Ivorian coming from the north, who were progressively considered as being true Ivorian. They have been considered as being kind of second-class citizens in their own country, and the tensions in the society were reflected within the military and the security forces more generally. The UN operation in Côte d'Ivoire, you know, played a key role to stabilize the situation on the ground, with the mandate of preventing resumption of fighting by the protagonists after September 2002, when we have this coup and then the rebellion and a few weeks of actual fighting between rebel forces and Gbagbo's royalist army. The UN operation was authorized only in 2004, after early military intervention by French forces and regional force of ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. So the first military intervention in the conflict was not led by the UN, but it was led by the French forces operating under separate commands, and by West African troops who intervened just to maintain a ceasefire in 2003. The UN forces replaced the West African force, but did not replace the French Licorne operation, which is still there today, which is still in place in the country, and which has now the mandate of the Security Council to act as rapid reaction forces to back the UN operation. think both UNOC and French forces played a positive role in because they managed to prevent actual fighting and to limit the casualties in the country. I think we should not forget that in Ivory Coast we have had really limited fighting between the two armed protagonists, between the army of Laurent Gbagbo and the rebel forces of the new forces. Actually, what we had in the country in the last few years was more a situation of no peace, no war than actual fighting. And this was really the result of the early military intervention of the international community, including France and the UN. The UN operation has both this military dimension but also a political one, and I think that the military part of the mission can be considered as a success, but the political dimension of the operation was not clearly a success because the UN has been unable to make a difference in the search for a political situation, a political solution to the conflict. But this is more of a responsibility of the Security Council, which gave a mandate and which decided on the political orientation of the UN intervention in the country than the responsibility of the operation itself. The division within the Security Council on the Ivorian conflict clearly prevents the international community from playing a clear positive role in finding a political solution early in the crisis in Ivory Coast. The French role in the Ivorian dispute is a very controversial issue. France has a special relationship with Ivory Coast, which used to be its colony before 1960. Even after independence in 1960, France maintained a very close relationship with Ivory Coast, and clearly the French were really involved directly in Ivorian politics. But this was also the choice made by Oufri Boigny, who was the first president of Ivory Coast and who has very close relationship with all the French presidents, going back to De Gaulle, to Mitterrand and Jacques Chirac. So it was very clear that the relationship between Côte d'Ivoire and France was very special. And there was a permanent military base of French forces in Abidjan, the commercial capital of the country. But the intimacy between French government and Ivory Coast changed significantly after the death of Oufri Boigny in 1993. I think French policy towards Ivory Coast was not reformed and was no longer adapted to the major political changes which were happening in Ivory Coast. So when the rebellion began in 2002, President Gbagbo asked the French to help him defeating the rebellion, but the response of the French government was to limit its military help to logistical support and to focus on the protection of French residents. So Gbagbo took this as an indication of French ambivalence and exploited the anti-French rhetoric to mobilize internally against the rebellion, and it's to some extent, President Gbagbo accused France to be backing the rebellion or to be taking advantage of the weakness of the elected government of Ivory Coast to impose some political change to the country. But French position was very difficult from the beginning, and it moved from visible hostility to President Gbagbo to a more neutral stance, and finally to a willingness to keep a lower profile in the resolution of the Ivorian crisis. Today, France has still more than 2,000 troops on the ground, and this Operation Licorne is very costly for the French government, and they have no clear exit strategy. French diplomacy is now quite happy with the ownership of the peace process by the Ivorians themselves, but this means also that France has no leverage anymore and no political gain to expect from the resolution of the Ivorian conflict. There were no fences, but only these checkpoints at the entrance and at the end of the confidence zone. So the vehicles and the people were specially checked for detention of arms, not to cross the buffer zone with weapons and not to infiltrate the zone of the adversary. The main problem for the civilians was the security in and around the zone of confidence and the ability to move from one point to another. In fact, the confidence zone being a large band of the Ivorian territory, it was not possible for the limited number of UN troops to guarantee the security of the civilians living in the village, which are part of this zone of confidence. So the most dangerous area in Ivory Coast during the conflict and the crisis was the west of the country, and part of the western part of the country is part of this zone of confidence. So the civilians living in the western part of the zone of confidence paid a very high cost to the conflict. There were several attacks perpetrated in the zone of confidence. That means that the UN were unable to control every flow of armed combatants coming into the zone. So there was also a very high level of criminality in this western part of the zone of confidence. But this is a very specific region of the country which used to be more dangerous than other parts because of cocoa production based in this region, because of a lot of money detained by people in the region. So that means that there were an interest for criminals to attack people, and because also of the importance of different communities, ethnic communities living in the west of the country for economic reasons. After the Ouagadougou Agreement was signed in March 2007, the checkpoints were progressively replaced by 17 observation posts on what is called a green line, which runs in the middle of the former zone of confidence. So now we do not have any more of the zone of confidence with checkpoints at the entrance and at the end of the zone of confidence, but we have a grid line with observation posts monitored by UN forces to make sure that the security of civilians can be really guaranteed by the new Ivorian brigades which were deployed in the former zone of confidence. So the Ouagadougou Agreement decided on the creation of these Ivorian mixed brigades. That means that each brigade includes security forces from the Loyalist Army and security forces from the former rebellion, that means from the new forces, and a few members of the police service of the United Nations operation to make sure that these people who used to be armed protagonists can work together to guarantee the security in the former zone of confidence. So this process of giving authority again to Ivorian security forces is just underway. It is still very fragile because the Ivorian security forces have not of the full capacity to move in this zone and to really to protect the civilians. So it is a difficult process, but it is quite important that the UN forces are still on the ground to make sure that the security of the civilians in the former zone of confidence will be protected in the coming months, and especially when the election in the country approaches. The real problem with the zone of confidence is that initially it was not meant to last 2 or 3 or 4 years. It was really an extension of the ceasefire line, and when it was defined in 2003, I think a lot of people was not thinking about 3 or 4 years of no peace, no war situation and the blocked political process in the country. So the fact is that there was just no administration, no justice, no police station, nothing really to represent the state in this zone of confidence. That means that there was no authority responsible for the well-being of ordinary citizens living in the zone of confidence. In terms of health structures, in terms of education, it was a real disaster, and it is today again a real disaster, even if the zone of confidence has now been formally suppressed. The peace process in Ivory Coast is a succession of political agreements and UN Security Council resolutions which were never fully implemented by the Ivorian parties. From the peace signed in Markusi in January 2003 to the latest peace agreement signed in Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso, there were various mediators, various international meetings on the situation in Ivory Coast. But clearly all these initiatives failed to find an end to the situation of no peace, no war, basically because the Ivorian actors were just unwilling to follow the decision of the international community. The Ouagadougou Agreement, which was signed in March, provided a real hope for the people in the country. It was the first agreement which was not imposed at all by external mediators, but it was negotiated and signed deliberately by the main armed protagonist of the conflict. That means the leader of the Force Nouvelle, the leader of the new forces, Guillaume Soro, and President Gbagbo. Guillaume Soro, the head of the new forces, became prime minister as a result of this agreement, and now we have a power sharing between the rebellion and President Gbagbo's government. But the various tasks which are called for in these agreements are just beginning on the ground. These main tasks have an identification process which should lead to the distribution of new identity cards to Ivorian and to voter cards to the Ivorian who will take part in the next presidential and general election in the country. Another important task is the disarmament process and the restructuring of the Ivorian army. And then finally, the peace process should end with the organization of free and fair elections. So all these processes are very complex and they are politically sensitive. The main stake remains the outcome of the election. It's again the question of power. President Gbagbo wants to go to the election only at the condition of being quite certain of winning them. And that is the difficulty with the peace process in Ivory Coast. The president is not sure of being able to win the election. He has some opponents who also have a strong popularity in the country, and it is not clear at all how the election will go. So all the debate around the composition of the electoral list for this election still there in the country. All the issues have not been resolved, and so the coming months and the coming year will continue to be very uncertain in the country, and it is possible that we have again political violence, even if the probability of a full resumption of conflict, I think, is very low in the country right now. I think the main achievement of the Ouagadougou Agreement is that the new forces, I think, do not want to go in a direct confrontation with the Ivorian army anymore. I don't think that there is really a possibility of this kind of a real conflict, but the political violence is a different issue, and the political crisis in Ivory Coast is clearly still an issue. It has not been solved. We cannot talk about the end of the crisis in Ivory Coast. We can talk about the end of the conflict between the rebellion and President Gbagbo. For lasting peace in Ivory Coast, I think that a full implementation of the Ouagadougou agreement is needed. There is a need for a transparent, free and fair election whose results are not going to be contested again by political actors in the country. And I think the new government, which will come after this election, should really engage in democratic reforms to rebuild the Ivorian society and to pave the way for long-term stability. And I should say that it is very early to be sure that the Ivorian political leadership has stood the need to move forward and to have an idea of the general interest and not only trying to keep the power or to access the power at any cost.